All right, good evening everyone and welcome. This is the Discovering Buddhism module called Refuge in the Three Jewels. And tonight is class one of five, so we will meet every Monday night in March, and there's five Mondays in March. So this class will expand those Mondays in March, and then we'll start fresh that first Monday in April with a new module. So our instructor, of course, is Robbie Watkins. He's selling in. And you probably found the handout out front. This handout is, of course, online as well. So everything is posted online, this handout, as well as any homework assignments, the completion card from previous modules, all online. So feel free to check that out if you don't want a paper copy. And how to get to those online resources is about three quarters of the way down in the boxes where it says resources. On the back of this about Discovering Buddhism handout is an area in which you can record your readings, your meditations, and any other practices that are assigned. So you can keep track with those. And I encourage you to do so even if you're not working towards the Discovering Buddhism certificate. Just go ahead and keep track of it anyway, because you never know, you might finish it all and then be able to turn that in and get a certificate. If you're going for the FPMT certificate, there's a bit more that is required, and that would be on that right-hand side of that box. You can find information at the FPMT online resource or online learning website. I do want to remind you to silence your cell phones. And let's see. Oh, yeah, since it is the first class, Erin Sloan, one of the Kadampa Center board members, she was not able to come in, pop in tonight to make this announcement, so she asked me to. But since it is the first class, just a quick reminder that everything we do here at Kadampa Center is free of charge. And so if you are so inclined to make a donation, there's many opportunities and ways to do so. On the back of the handout at the bottom, it says giving, and there are multiple ways to do that. You can give through texting. You can give by simply putting some cash in an envelope and putting it in a drop box. You can go online and to our donation button on the website as well. So lots and lots of ways, and it certainly is a practice in generosity. So without further ado, then, I guess we'll go ahead and get started. You ready? Okay.
Testing. Okay, now I'm on. Okay, good evening, everybody. Welcome to Discovering Buddhism. The module is Refuge and the Three Jewels. What was the last module, Linda?
It was Establishing.
Okay, great. And what's the next one? Do you remember?
Okay, yeah, the last one was Establishing a Daily Practice. The one after this is Bodhicitta.
Okay, great. My name is Robbie Watkins. I've been studying Tibetan Buddhism since about 1981, and I've been a member of Kadampa Center since 1993. I've been teaching the Discovering Buddhism classes ever since they've been in effect, which is probably close to 18 or 20 years now. To sit up here and teach one of these classes, believe it or not, you have to have a certification from the FPMT, our parent organization, the worldwide organization that we're part of, and not to toot my horn or anything, but it's a fairly arduous process to get that certification. Unfortunately, there are three other people, Don Brown, Steve Smith, and Hemet Pandya, who also have the certification, so we rotate teaching these modules, and we would love to have other people get certified so they can sit up here if that is anything that appeals to you. As Linda says, it was 5 weeks, 7 to 8:30, Monday night's pretty short self-contained course. The material in this module, I think, is quite manageable, so I don't think we'll have a problem getting through it. I always encourage a lot of discussion. If there's not much discussion, there'll be a lot of silent time over the next month. Let me just get a feel for who's here. Who's here at Kadampa Center for the very first time tonight? A couple people, yeah. Okay. Glad to have you here. I think you'll be able to pick up without any problems. We're going to cover some fairly basic material. Now, who here is planning on taking all of the Discovering Buddhism modules? We have a number of, okay, a lot of people. Raise your hands again, let me just see. Okay, I'm impressed. That's fantastic. Is there anybody here who's taken this module before, maybe in a previous cycle? Linda and Chris, okay. I don't think I've ever led this module, so this will be a little bit of an experiment for me also. I'm going to give out homework every night. It's going to be very simple. It'll be what to meditate on during the coming week and a topic to think about and maybe some readings. But the main material we'll discuss here in the class, and then the meditation at home is really the root of the class. What I'd like people to do is just introduce themselves to other people in the room. Since we have a very diverse group, just get up and walk around, say hello, give your names to people, since we'll be together for 5 weeks. Start putting names with faces. Just take a couple minutes and do that. Thank you. Okay, if people can come back to their seats. And we have a video that's produced by FPMT, the organization that we're part of, the Foundation for the Preservation of the Mahayana Tradition. Is that Sydney? Is that the Sydney Bridge? It's not New York, yeah. Or is it San Francisco? There's a Transamerica Tower over to the right. Okay, so it's, yeah, okay, that's the Oakland Bay Bridge there, yeah. It's not the Golden Gate, yeah, because it's got that big lump in the middle. Okay, I don't know what that has to do with anything. Anyway, the FPMT, there's an FPMT center in San Francisco, maybe, yeah. The Foundation for the Preservation of the Mahayana Tradition is the organization that we're part of. It's about 160 centers around the world. For the propagation of Buddhism in the Tibetan tradition, and they have produced these videos, an introduction to each module in the Discovering Buddhism series. Mm-hmm. Venerable George Chernoff, who will be here later this year, hopefully. He was here last year. Lama Zopa Rinpoche with His Holiness, the Dalai Lama. Some movie star on the right there. Venerable Rabina. Okay. Thank you, Linda, for playing that. See, can I give you the homework to make copies for at some point? There was a lot in that video. Don't worry if you didn't pick up on everything. We'll cover most of the things that they mentioned in that class. We'll cover in this class most of the things that were mentioned in the video. I'd like to start with some meditation and some prayers. So get a copy of the Gold Prayer Book. Turn to page 34. And if you're new here and these prayers don't make any sense at all, that's perfectly okay. You can think of them in terms of aspirations. And so we'll read through the prayers, the Taking Refuge in Bodhicitta, three times, the Four Immeasurables, Seven Limb Prayer, and then the Mandala Offering. And then after that, we'll do some meditation, and I'll lead you through that. What's the Tibetan word for meditation? Gom. So this room is called a gompa, which is a room, means a room for meditation, or a space for meditation. For the homework, I'm going to be asking you to meditate at home 6 days out of each week on various subjects. What's the Tibetan definition of meditation? Is it sitting and blanking out, going totally blank, thought free? Anybody know what the definition of meditation is? Chris, you're a ringer. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. We got it up here though. Yeah. Okay. We do have people at home. We are streaming this, so let's speak into the mic. Yeah. You want to give us again?
To acquaint our mind with virtue.
Yeah. You've gone a little. The simple definition is to acquaint our mind with something. Okay. Or to become familiar with. Nothing more than that. It's not anything mystical or strange. It's becoming familiar with something. And when we first start to meditate, the first thing we become familiar with is our own mind and its different thoughts and emotions. And it's a pretty horrifying process for most of us. A lot of stuff that we haven't necessarily looked at. We become familiar with what's in our mind, how our mind works, what sort of patterns are there, what sort of emotions seem to come up the most often, whether it's anger or attachment or virtuous ones like patience and love. So we become familiar with what's in our own mind. And then we start to become familiar with positive states of mind, with virtue, if we're practicing Buddhists. You know, if we were practicing, you know, child rapists, we'd practice becoming familiar with something else. But we want to become familiar with virtuous thoughts because that's what makes us happy. That's the cause of happiness, having virtuous thoughts. As Venerable, his name is also Neil Houston, the Australian monk in the beginning said, happiness comes from within. So it involves becoming familiar or repeating over virtuous thoughts, love, compassion, kindness, patience. And again, this goes back to the very first module, mind and its nature. The Buddha is saying our mind is infinitely flexible and changeable. And if we think those thoughts, our mind becomes those qualities. Okay? If we think thoughts of anger, resentment, hatred, our mind becomes like that. But our mind is only in the quality of its thoughts. It has no fixed way of being. So when we meditate on positive qualities, our mind takes on that nature. So that's all meditation is. It's just working with your mind and becoming familiar with various basic qualities. We're just going to do a simple breathing meditation tonight, but I'll talk you through that. But we'll start with the prayers. Taking Refuge in Bodhicitta three times. We'll do them all in English. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends and hatred for... Reverently I prostrate with my body, speech, and mind. I present clouds of every type of offering, actual and imagined. I declare all my negative action accumulated since beginningless time, and rejoice in the merit of all holy and ordinary beings. Please remain until the end of cyclic existence, and turn the wheel of Dharma for living beings. I dedicate my own merits and those of all others to the great enlightenment. This ground, anointed with perfume, strewn with flowers, adorned with Mount Meru, four continents, the sun and the moon, I imagine this as a Buddha field and offer it. May all living beings enjoy this pure land. Idam Guru Ratna Mandala Kam Nirya Tayami. Okay. So we recite those prayers to prepare our mind for the meditation that's to follow. So we'll begin to a simple meditation, and some people are expert at this and you can just ignore what I'm saying. Some people are fairly new, so I'm going to start by reviewing the posture. The point of establishing a meditation posture is to get a posture that's stable and non-distracting. So once you kind of set it, it takes care of yourself and your body doesn't become a continuous distraction during the meditation that follows. So if we're sitting in a chair, you want to sit with your feet up flat on the floor. If you want to put a cushion underneath your feet, that's fine. If you're sitting on the floor on a cushion, sit towards the front third of the cushion. Don't sit back in the middle, but towards the front third so you're tilted forward a little bit and your pelvis opens up. The most important aspect of the posture is our back. A little bit straighter than we usually sit, okay? Not rigid, but again, not leaning back or slumped over, but a little bit straighter, a little bit more vertical. Our head is straight on our shoulders, maybe just a couple degrees in front of the vertical. Our eyes can either be just very slightly open, so a little bit of light comes in, or very lightly closed, whatever works for you. Our mouth is lightly closed, not clenched. Our lips touching the tongue on the roof of our mouth. Our shoulders are down, not up around our ears, but relaxed. And a little bit back, so our chest is a little bit open. Upper arms are away from the sides of our torso, so some air can flow through. And we put our right hand on our left, with our thumbs touching slightly below the level of the navel. And our legs can be in any position that we find comfortable. As we discussed, if you're sitting in a chair, feet flat on the floor, if you're on a cushion, any variation on from cross-legged to full lotus is fine. So So take a minute and just scan your body, starting at the top of the head, working down. Establish any or identify any sources of tension or discomfort and address those now so they don't come up over and over again during the course of the meditation. And now we begin by taking three deep breaths from the stomach so that the stomach expands on the in-breath, our diaphragm is pulled down and our lungs completely fill, and then our stomach contracts on the out-breath. Three slow deep breaths like that. And now we allow our breathing to return to its normal pattern. And we begin every meditation in this tradition by setting our motivation, thinking about why am I doing this? And any motivation is a completely valid one. If we're just curious, that's fine. If we're doing our meditation because it calms our mind and makes us feel a little more relaxed, that's great. If we're doing it so we can be a kinder person to the people in our lives, that's wonderful. But the Buddha said the most powerful motivation, the one that gives the most force to our meditation practice, is what's referred to as the bodhicitta motivation. The motivation that everything I do, including this simple meditation to follow, I do so that I can become enlightened, by which we mean completely wise and completely compassionate, so that I can be of benefit to others. That's the bodhicitta motivation. The wish to become enlightened for the benefit of others. It's not the way we normally think. That doesn't necessarily come naturally to us. But even if we kind of grit our teeth and force it out, it's said to be incredibly beneficial. So let's just take a moment and generate the bodhicitta motivation. And having set our motivation, we begin the actual meditation process. And we're going to do a very simple, but not necessarily very easy, breathing meditation. We take our mind, our awareness, and place it simply on the movement of the breath in and out through our nostrils. The physical, tactile sensation of the movement of the air. Mind directly perceiving breath. Nothing more, nothing less than that. We're not going to count the breaths. We're not going to visualize the breaths. We're not going to describe the breath to ourselves. Just direct experience. Using the mind's natural, but probably for most of us, pretty undeveloped ability to concentrate. And every time we notice that the mind has moved off to something else, a sound that we hear, or an ache in our knee, or a thought about something we need to do on the way home, we just set that aside and come back to the breath. Over and over and over again. And just as we always begin our meditation by setting our motivation, we always end with a dedication. We acknowledge that we've done something out of the ordinary, something that in a very small way has made a positive imprint on our mind stream. And we think, may that positive imprint not be lost, but may it ripen in the future in a way that benefits others. So just think along those lines for a moment. And you can relax your concentration now. Okay, any questions about that practice, about that meditation, what we did there? Okay, that's the standard format I'd like you to follow at home. I've asked you to identify a meditation spot in your home, which can be an issue sometimes if you have a lot of other people and animals and such that tend to roam around. But it should be a place that's fairly quiet, that you find a pleasant environment. You don't have to set up an altar, but if you want to do that, that's fine. But it should be a neat environment and, you know, one that gives you a positive imprint on your mind stream. And it's good to set a time every day to do your meditation. It doesn't have to be first thing in the morning. It doesn't have to be last thing at night. But whatever works for your schedule, and let the other people in your house know that that's your time for yourself. Don't come to you with any questions or, you know, if the house is on fire, they could tell you that. But otherwise, that's 10 minutes you're going to take for yourself once a day. And even that sometimes is very hard for us to realize. So it takes a little bit of planning. But I'd like you to identify your meditation spot and your meditation time over the coming week. Okay, let's see. Okay, we're just going to do some very introductory material tonight, but these are good terms to know and good definitions, so I hope this is useful. If you have comments or questions, please use the mic so that all our fans around the world can hear you. There was a very great teacher named Song Rinpoche, and he was one of the tutors, one of the teachers and gurus of His Holiness the Dalai Lama. And what do you think he said was the most important teaching of the Buddha of all the countless teachings he gave? Not countless, but thousands of different subjects he talked about. What do you think was, Song Rinpoche said, was the most important and the most profound? Anybody want to take a guess?
Emptiness.
That's what I would have said, and that is wrong, okay? That's not what he said. I want to take a second. Anybody else want to take a stab? Okay.
Compassion?
No, that's another good guess, and that's another wrong guess, okay? Two out of three. One more guess.
Love?
Wrong again. Yeah, okay. He said the most important teaching of the Buddha was karma. Okay, an understanding of cause and effect. Okay, that an understanding that everything we do makes an imprint on our mind stream that we will experience in the future. Everything that we're experiencing now is the result of things we've done in the past. And if you think about it, you can understand why, or start to understand, probably not as deeply as it, why I said it, because karma is what motivates us. An understanding of karma is what leads us to develop love and compassion and an understanding of emptiness. But he said, the teaching on karma, the law of cause and effect, the way the world is, the nature of reality, was the most important teaching of the Buddha. And what did he say was the second most important teaching of the Buddha? Anybody want to guess at this?
How about impermanence?
Wrong. Good guess. The second most important teaching, he said, was taking refuge. Again, that surprised me. That's not the way I would have ranked them. Just to clear one thing up, you hear a lot of talk about refuge ceremonies. Okay, this is a refuge ceremony is a formal ceremony that you participate in. It's kind of like being confirmed in a Christian religion. It's a way of acknowledging that this is the path that you want to take. And you participate in a refuge ceremony with a qualified teacher. And Geshe Sampo, who's one of our two resident teachers here, along with Geshe Gelug, will be offering refuge in June, I think. And we'll talk about that later, what that means going through that ceremony. And that's something you go through one time. You participate in a refuge ceremony only once. So that's a very specific event. What we're talking about is, as you heard people talk about in the video, taking refuge as a continuous process, something that you're coming back to over and over and over again. They say if you take certain vows, you're supposed to remember taking refuge at least 6 times a day. Okay, so it's a continuous mental state of going for refuge. Okay? So the first teaching, most important teaching was karma, and there's a module on that that's already been taught. Is that right? Yeah, that was a few modules ago. Cause and effect, the way the world exists, why things happen. And the second most important teaching was going for refuge. Okay? And we'll talk a little bit about why he may have said that. This is Song Rinpoche, S-O-N-G, space Rinpoche. Yeah. Great teacher who died a few years ago. What does the word refuge mean to people? Just in ordinary English, not Buddhist definition. Just give me a few ideas what you think of when you think of refuge. Surrender, okay.
Shelter.
I'll just repeat them loudly.
Safety.
Good.
Escape.
Okay. I'm going to give you the dictionary definitions. Shelter or protection from danger and distress. This is not a specific Buddhist definition. This is just in the dictionary. Shelter or protection from danger and distress, something to which one has recourse in difficulties. Okay? So shelter, safety, I think those are the words. Those are the words that come to mind. Buddhist refuge, be a little bit more specific what we're talking about. Buddhist refuge means putting a safe and positive direction on our life, indicated by the three jewels, and pledging to maintain this direction unwaveringly until it brings us to liberation and enlightenment. Okay? I think the important part to remember is putting a safe and positive direction on our life. Parenthesis indicated by the three jewels, with the goal to achieve liberation, freedom from suffering, also called nirvana is the Sanskrit term for that, and ultimately enlightenment, which is even beyond that, which is the complete development of our qualities of wisdom and compassion, i.e. becoming a Buddha ourselves. Okay, we practice Buddhism and what's referred to as the Mahayana tradition, the great vehicle, which is the Buddhism of China, Japan, Tibet, Sri Lanka, and some other countries, where the goal is not just freedom from suffering, nirvana, but actual enlightenment ourselves. We can become a Buddha, according to the teachings in those traditions. So Buddhist refuge is putting a safe and positive direction on our lives, as indicated by the three jewels. Okay? So the three jewels are, what are the three jewels? The Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. So we'll talk a little bit about what those terms mean. They're referred to as the three jewels, because they are incredibly precious, so we can think of them as diamonds, rubies, and emeralds, or whatever, I don't know. But three jewels, they're very precious, okay? And this is kind of pithy material, so you might want to memorize this. So we've got the three jewels. There used to be a coffee shop in New York that was run by a Buddhist group called the Three Jewels. I always thought that was a great name for a coffee shop. Let's see, the Buddha. The Dharma. And the Sangha. Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. You should be able to just let flow off your tongue. Okay. And under each of these, there is a conventional meaning or a conventional sense, and then there's an actual. You could almost call the conventional one the mundane, not in a negative sense, but the day-to-day. Sense. So there's conventional and actual under each one. What does the word Buddha mean? Anyone know?
Awakened.
Yes, good, thank you. Awakened one. Someone who is awakened from the sleep of not understanding reality. Okay? Of not seeing things how they are. Awakened from the dreams and the delusions. And sees reality exactly as it is. Okay? A Buddha, the historical Buddha, our own potential to become a Buddha, is an awakened one. Okay? Hold on, let's see. Oops! Linda, I spilled my water. I'm sorry. Get a few paper towels. Let's see, where are my notes? Oh, thank you. Yeah, it beads up kind of nicely there. Okay. Buddha is the awakened one. Okay. What's the definition of Dharma? Anyone know that?
Teaching.
Well, that's what it refers to, but what's that word actually mean? The word Dharma, anybody know? It means that which separates us from suffering. Okay? Anything that separates us from suffering is considered Dharma. Okay? Yeah, I think that'll just dry on its own for now. Thank you very much. Sorry about that. And the Sangha, anybody know what Sangha means?
Community.
That's how it's conventionally used. The actual meaning of the word is the is evolved beings, okay, or clear beings. Okay, that's a little bit more vague. Okay, so the Buddha is the awakened one. Dharma is that which separates us from suffering. Sangha, this is just the definitions of those words. Sangha is the evolved ones. Okay? When we talk about the conventional Buddha, what are we talking about? Anybody know? Conventional and mundane Buddhas. We're talking about the statues, images, pictures of the Buddha. Those are conventional Buddhas, okay? They are not the actual Buddha itself, but they are representations of the Buddha. The actual Buddha is any omniscient being, such as the historical Buddha who lived about 2,500 years ago. According to the Buddhist teachings, there have been countless omniscient beings, someone who develops completely their qualities of mind. Anyone who achieves that state is considered an actual Buddha, an actual object of refuge. The Dharma, that which holds us back from suffering. The conventional Dharma is the books, the teachings, the audio tapes, the podcast, anything like that. That's the conventional Dharma. The actual Dharma, anybody want to take a stab at that? Close. It's the realizations in the minds of the students, okay? Or actually in the minds of those who follow the path, okay? So the actual Dharma is the realizations in your own mind, okay? The books, the tapes are the conventional representation of that, okay? And... Okay, conventional Sangha. What's the conventional definition of the Sangha? Anybody know? No, it's more specific than that. It's four or more ordained monks and nuns. That's, you have to have four, for some reason you have to have four for it to be considered a Sangha. Here at Kadampa Center, we have two resident Geshe's. We have three resident nuns. So we have a conventional Sangha here. Okay? The actual Sangha is anyone who has a direct insight into the nature of emptiness, the way things exist. That's the actual Sangha. Okay? Conventional Sangha, four or more ordained people. Actual Sangha is the anyone who has a direct insight into emptiness. The term Sangha is used in a lot of other ways. When we talk about the FPMT, the organization that we're part of, we talk about the Western Sangha, which is those Westerners who have taken robes. But we also speak of everyone who comes to Kadampa Center as being part of the Sangha. Okay, but you can get support from people who come to Kadampa Center. They're not necessarily what you would take refuge in. Okay, not to put us down, but the actual Sangha that you're taking refuge in is those who have realized and have a direct insight into emptiness. Okay, the conventional three jewels are not the same as the actual three jewels. Okay? This is a very important point. They're just representations that help us in our practice. The statue of the Buddha is not the Buddha. Okay? We don't go for refuge to a statue. We don't worship a statue. We're talking about the actual living beings who have achieved enlightenment in their lifetime. Okay? The text, so we may respect them, the books. You know, we have traditions where you don't put a book directly on the floor. Those are not the actual Dharma. Okay? And the people in robes are not the actual Sangha. They're the conventional Sangha. Okay? So they're not identical. Okay? We're really... Dharma and Sangha are representations that can help us. Testing. Okay. Let's see, what else did I want to go through tonight? That's most of it. Okay. Okay, any questions or comments about this? So far, this material, this is just really introductory, but I think it's good to get clear on these. Any comments? Okay. I'm just going to bring this up, and we'll talk about this more next week. Why do we go for refuge? What are the causes of going for refuge? As Buddhist, why do we go for refuge? That's very close. There are two reasons. I think I'll miss the two F's. So elaborate on suffering. Do we want more suffering? Do we want to suffer? Close, but it's a word people don't like to use. We think of it as a negative mind state. Close, getting close. Fear. Fear of suffering, okay? And the Buddha said this type of fear is not negative. I like to think of it as informed knowledge about the consequences of our action. Okay? The fear that stops us from stepping in front of a speeding car is not a negative mind state. Okay? That's a positive mental factor. Because we know if we step in front of a car, we're going to suffer. Okay? And in the same way, if we understand the law of karma, cause and effect, we understand all these negative imprints that we've placed on our mind stream that will cause us to suffer in the future. And we say, I don't want to do this anymore. Okay? It's like being out in a vast field and there's a tremendous lightning storm coming up that's striking the ground and setting fires and everything. And you're in the middle of, or you see that approaching and you say, I want to get away from this. I don't want to experience it. That kind of fear, okay, based on understanding of karma, that negative actions will cause us to suffer, okay? So the first reason we go for refuge is because of fear. Fear in a positive motivating sense, okay? The second F, what do you think that may be? If we're out in this field and we see this horrible storm coming up, so we want to get away from it, but what do we also need? Are we just going to run around like crazy in the middle of the field? Yes, we see that there is a safe barn or something that won't get struck by lightning on the other side of the field. We know there is a safe place. So we go in that direction. So this is what we call faith. And it's not faith in the sense of blind faith or mindless faith or anything like that. It's a faith in the sense... I've stepped on every single thing up here. Yeah. I never do that. I don't know what's going on tonight. This is faith in the sense of confidence. Confidence in the three jewels, which is based on observation, reason, understanding, familiarity, is not blind faith. Okay? So we'll talk more about this next week, but I just want to put these two words in people's minds because a lot of us don't like either of them particularly. They sound a little too much like religion or something if we start talking about fear and faith. So we'll talk about that next week. But just think about those as motivating forces, okay? Is this still working? Yeah, okay. I'm just not holding it close enough. Okay. And that's it for tonight. We'll review this material next week. And we'll talk about the causes of going for refuge. And we'll talk more about what valid objects of refuge are. The homework, I'd like you to just think about what are some of the things that you take refuge in now and whether they're reliable, whether they're valid objects of refuge. They may be. I'm not saying they're not. But just look at some of the things you take refuge in, and we'll go from there. Any questions or comments? Okay, that's it. Thank you very much, and I'll see you all next week.
So there are hard copies of the homework just outside the door there, and then I will post it online probably tonight, maybe tomorrow. So look for it online, too, if you don't want a hard copy.